The dark days are done, and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you. This is John Barber. That was Sarita, my wife, singing Sunny with the great, incomparable Joe Pass Trio. And that was Francis Sinatra the night he hosted the Tonight Show and had me on as a guest, and I thanked him for being my opening act. It is 5:12 here in Las Vegas. I'm really sorry for the delay in getting on the air. We've had some technical problems with Skype due to some storms out here in the West, and it is also daylight saving time. What I absolutely hate it. It's 5 o'clock and it's pitch dark, and it started a day and a half ago. An American Indian chief once said about daylight saving time, only a white man could cut 8 inches off of the top of a blanket and sew it onto the bottom of the blanket and tell you that he has a larger blanket. How wonderful is that? Anyway, on Halloween night, I didn't watch Frankenstein or Dracula. I watched the tape of The Walking Dead, otherwise known as the Republican debates, sponsored by the World Wrestling Federation. The polls now seem to indicate that it's a really tight race between all the candidates, because it seems there is now one voter for each candidate. Do you know that the World Series, which was just easily won by the Kansas City Royals, do you know if the World Series were run like the American presidential campaigns, the two worst teams would have been playing off? I'm telling you, this talkathon, proved how much of a liar even Abe Lincoln was when he said, we have government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I'm telling you, if these debates were more honest and more meaningful and more for the people, the networks that broadcast them would issue to the audiences they entered stun guns. First to shut the candidates up, and then to shut the moderators up. What a government we have. Around the world, I can't believe it. We're feared as a monster, and at home, it's an absolute laughingstock. You know, I hear people, bright people, all the time, articulate people, saying we need change in Washington, something that Obama has already lied about making. I mean, the only change he ever made was probably for a quarter. But my question is, how do you fight idiots? About 4 years ago, for those of you who are film buffs, there was a movie that came out called Idiocracy that hit it right on the head, disproving, I guess, what that brilliant Chris Hedges said when he called this a corporatocracy. It's an idiocracy. Now, we had trouble, are having trouble, getting Cindy Sheehan because of difficulties in California. But I'm going to tell you my thoughts about her in my introduction, and then I have a real special treat for you following that. Okay, my thoughts are that one person who's been fighting this idiocracy passionately and articulately from the beginning is, to me, this country's first lady, America's first lady of liberty. And I was honored to have her say she would be on my show tonight. She has a fabulous book out on Amazon, actually her 8th book, by the way, called The Obama Files. It has six must-read and easy-to-read chapters covering from 2009 to 2014, beginning with her very moving letter to President Obama about the meaning of the death of her son, Casey, and the death of other mothers' sons, and not just Americans. She is, to me, the rightful recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. Fortunately, she authors daily a lively blog and hosts her own very popular show, Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And while trying to make the world a better place for the rest of us, she daily makes it a better place for her five very lucky grandchildren who call her that great movie musical title, Gigi. And I would have been loved to have had her, and hopefully will have her. But the special treat for me is that my second guest, who's the only person on the planet I would consider as a regular on the show, and somebody who I believe is the best informed person in the United States. He is really the voice of America. And back in 2005, he was a bright young journalist producer, PBS station in Washington, D.C., and came along this fabulous peace march. And the principal speaker of that peace march was to be Cindy Sheehan. She was the queen. She was the queen. They had all the heavyweights there, including Joan Baez, and I mean, all of them. But they were all there subservient to Cindy Sheehan. Must have been 500,000 people. Anyway, Joseph Talese's his name, and he sent me a copy of that fabulous 6 minutes of film, which I wish I could put up and show to you. And since he was there and Cindy was not, I've asked him if he would come on, first of all, and talk about how he came to do that and his impressions of what had happened to the peace movement and what were their expectations. And Joe, thank you so much for being here early. I really appreciate it. You are a godsend. And I am an atheist, but you are a godsend.
Well, that's an appropriate relationship between those two principles. You know, how did we come upon it? We were starting a new show on WJLA ABC7. That'd be the late, great Ray Fargus, a longtime news producer at NBC News, going all the way back to the Huntley-Brinkley Report, became a very good friend and a television mentor of mine. And this new news magazine that was going to air on ABC in D.C., we had our first program. And obviously, Cindy Sheehan was dominating the news in many ways the summer of 2005. We kind of forget because so much water has gone under the bridge. But in many ways, if you want to look at the tipping point, people kind of forget how badly things turned against George W. Bush's administration in the second half of his presidency. It's something that we are in some ways relearning by watching Mr. Fix-It, because that's his new title, Jeb Bush's new title, just kind of tie into your opening about the idiocracy. He's now Mr. Fix-It, John. He's rebooted. And I think the voters are going to reboot him back out of the race again, even though he's now Mr. Fix-It. But Donald Trump has hammered him on his brother's failures. And, you know, the tide really changed when Cindy Sheehan went to Crawford and set up Camp Casey outside of the Crawford compound, the presidential compound, where he would go and chop down brush and mesquite and, you know.
I remember it very well.
Casey. So she finally relocated that camp to Washington, D.C. on the Mall. And it became the focal point of what culminated in this protest. It was actually a protest and a concert called Operation Ceasefire. Joan Baez, Thievery Corporation, Steve Earle, Ted Leo and the Pharmacist. I mean, it was just a massive event with hundreds of thousands of people. And the way we were able to get that on the ABC affiliate and do a full 6+ minutes on it was because of the impact she was having in changing the conversation nationally about what was going on in Iraq. And the change was from, hey, we got to get them before they get us. Remember 9/11, anthrax attacks, and the anthrax vial and all those things. Well, that all broke. The ice broke when Cindy Sheehan basically came out and said, my son died for nothing. I would like the president to sit with me and explain to me why my son had to die for what is turning out to be a lie. Because finally it was breaking through something that if you had been reading particularly McClatchy papers before the Iraq War began, you knew that the aluminum tubes had nothing to do with centrifuges. They were actually really sort of hackneyed little rocket bodies. But they
Joe,
had...
everyone knew that, and everyone was aware of that. But to me, I mean, it looked as though there would be a monumental change, and it all just disappeared.
They didn't. But you see, John, I was in Washington, D.C. when 9/11 happened, and then I was obviously there to do that story. They all kind of didn't know that. Maybe in the back of their mind, the mainstream media, the establishment media kind of knew it. But everybody went along for the ride. And, you know, there's a reason why all of those reporters were embedded. It's because the Pentagon had done a study coming out of Vietnam and realized that what you need to do to get favorable reporting is to create unit cohesion between the reporter and the unit.
Joe, that's not the point that I'm thinking about.
This is
about most people. But look, to me, the disappointment is not in Obama. The disappointment is not in the Democrats. To me, the monumental disappointment, and I must tell you, it must break Cindy Sheehan's heart to even think about it, because maybe the public did not know, but the major peace activists did know. And I'll start with the names like Jane Fonda, Sean Penn,
right,
Ed Asner, Joan Baez, Arianna Huffington. They all knew not only was that a lie, but the continuing fake terrorist wars are lies. And where have their voices gone?
Where have all the flowers gone? You know, John, I wonder what your impressions are. This is what I felt. The fact that the attack happened in New York and the fact that it happened at the Trade Center, and the way that it was repeated and the over and over again, the footage was repeated. And I don't know if you remember, I think for a couple years after, like one day NBC just ran the whole day over again on MSNBC from start to finish so that you could relive it real time, in a sense, what had happened 2 or 3 or 5 years earlier. And the media was hit in a way, sucker punched in a way, that the entire what you would consider to be sort of the media savvy anti-war establishment was on its heels. I mean, I really do think that people were afraid of being called unpatriotic. We had the Patriot Act. It was called the Patriot Act for a reason. And we were definitely in our sort of proto-fascist moment.
That's what the Nazis called it in the mid-30s.
That's right.
The Patriot Act.
That's right. And that's, I think, you know, when you saw the documentary I did called The Warning, there was this moment when we were making this in the end of 2006 and into 2007 and then released right after the election, that it looked like there was a fascist moment maybe happening in America. I don't think it's played out that way, because what has happened is that everybody is relaxed into the new normal, which is that you can watch a story about war, about troops being 50 troops being sent into Syria, and then cut to commercial and see when the new iPhone is coming out. And people have become inured to this never-ending war against an invisible enemy, as the great columnist John Carroll called it. But to get back to Cindy, the thing that I think is notable is that the air was far thicker before Cindy Sheehan came than it was after. She broke through that fog of war that was over everybody. And as you saw with the story we did, Joan Baez and Jesse Jackson and Dick Gregory, although Dick Gregory was always on the right side of that one, they all came out on her heels, as you so rightly put it. She paved the way, and they all followed her her tailwind.
Joe, that was 10 years ago. It is now 2015. Let's take the case of Arianna Huffington, first of all. And maybe Joan – not Joan Baez. Let's start with Jane Fonda. In 1970, when Jane Fonda was an extremely harsh critic of the Vietnam War, and they called her Hanoi Jane, when she was being vilified by the media and the public, and they wanted her in prison along with Muhammad Ali because he wouldn't kill yellow people because it was white people in America causing him the problem, I gave her 60 minutes of airtime. I took her aside afterwards and told her if she was shrill, she was never going to convince anybody because people aren't intelligent. They don't listen to facts. They respond to emotion. And if you yell at people, you're not teaching them. Just listen to Alex Jones. He can't teach you anything. He thinks turning up the volume is turning up the truth. It's not. You just have to – the facts. So after that, she became very articulate. Okay. Now along comes Iraq and not a word from her. She's selling exercise videos. I mean, she went from exercising free speech to just exercising. What happened to her? What happened to – Arianna Huffington. Arianna Huffington used to write these terrific books, Pigs at the Trough, attacking the establishment. A couple of years ago, she sells her post to AOL for $320 million and not a word about Iraq. They all know that it's total bullshit. Iraq is bullshit. The war on terror is bullshit. It's non-existent. Where have all the voices gone? And why did they go? You know, the only actor speaking up now is a guy named Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah. I will say Sean Penn has always been on the right side of these issues. And he's done a lot of hard work. He spent a lot of time in Iraq. He spent time in Haiti. The thing is here's the thing, John. A guy like Sean Penn won't get covered for doing that. And Mark Ruffalo has to do what he does on Twitter because there is – You, John, you know this. This media is owned by four big, gigantic, multinational corporations and interests. People are amazed when you think about J.P. Morgan and Jamie Dimon. You know, he makes $17 million a year. You know who's making $50+ million a year? Les Moonves of CBS.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, no. Moonves is making over $50 million
a year. That failed actor is making $50 million a year?
So when you think about...
Maybe they're paying him not to act anymore.
If you think about what the system is like and how it is, and this is one of the interesting things about what we see with the Republican debate, which has turned into, to get back to Idiocracy... There is an ongoing debate about the next debate among the debaters who are unhappy with the last debate. So we don't know what the next debate is going to be because all the debaters can't together because they're having a debate about how they're going to attack the way the next debate is going to be debated. But
Could I touch on Cindy just a bit since you know her so well? She was
I know of what she did very well, and I was able to interview her, which was a very compelling moment to sit there with her looking at me and saying, you know, when you lose a child, it's a visceral feeling. You feel it in your entire body. And as you said, John, that was not shrill. That was educational.
I watched the video twice, and it was heartbreaking. She was so peaceful and calm about it. You know, you could empathize with her, but, you know, she was not the only mother who had a child murdered by the lies of George Bush and the rest of our government. Okay. What was it about Cindy that turned her from just what seemed to be an ordinary kind of plain housewife to this icon of peace? And she rises to that position. She stays at that position. But everyone who supported her then, seems to have disappeared.
Well, don't you think that's the genius of the two-party system in a sense, and I don't mean genius like I'm celebrating it, but I mean the inherent clever nature of the two-party system is that when Obama comes in, all hopey and very changey, and and in the really the strangest moment in the history of the Nobel Prize, is awarded a peace prize before he ever has a chance to make peace or war, that it puts a rubber stamp on the ongoing war in a way that only that kind of transition could. And, you know, I think one of the things that the two-party system generates is a lot of compliance, because you are rooting for – you brought up the World Series. Well, if you're rooting for the Royals and the Royals win, maybe you're not going to make a big stink about the fact that one of the players was caught using steroids.
That's true.
You know, we are.
That's why I don't watch football anymore.
It's
because of what happened at the Super Bowl last year. Brady cheated. The trophy should have gone to the other team, and it didn't.
But John, this is America. This is Milton Friedman's dream come true. The bottom line is the only line, and winning solves everything. And so when the Democrats win and you feel like you finally defeated George Bush and it's all over with because George Bush was such a disaster, particularly those final 3 years, thanks in no part to Cindy Sheehan changing the national conversation about George W. Bush, everybody becomes triumphant. Hey, it is amazing that America, something I never thought I would see in my lifetime, elected a black man, African-American man, as president. And there was a big sigh of relief. Interesting that sigh of relief came just as a giant sucking sound was taking all of the wealth out of the bank accounts, the homes, the pockets of the working and middle classes through the financial crisis, a perfectly timed moment during that transition to basically fill the getaway car and leave.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Well, it's surprising to me also that another black, Ben Carson, seems to be making some headway in this country.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Thank you for that smile upon your face, oh sunny.
Hi, this is John Barber. You may remember me as the co-host, producer, and creator of Real People, America's first reality show, or most recently as the writer-director of what's been called the definitive documentary on JFK's murder, The Last Word on the Assassination. Now I'm doing a show every other Monday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time on BBS. You'll hear provocative views, unreported news, and film reviews from me, with outstanding guests and you. Join me on John Barber's World.
Those of you who have an ongoing interest in the JFK assassination might want to know about this. TV producer John Barber, he put together a dream team of JFK researchers, including Coast regular Jim Mars and world-class JFK writers Dick Russell and Joan Mellon. They all got together at UNLV in front of a live audience. They had a screening of Barber's terrific, and I'd say historic, film based on interviews with prosecutor Jim Garrison of New Orleans. And then after the film was shown, the experts all talked about the latest JFK theories and evidence. It's now out on a DVD. Terrific stuff. I'm George Knack, Coast to Coast AM.
I'd like to thank George Knack for that totally unsolicited review of
Hello?
Oh, Cindy, bless your heart. Oh, you missed. Oh, love, you missed the most wonderful introduction to you that anybody ever gave.
Aww.
So I am so glad you're here. And Joe Satilli, who is also on the line, surprisingly, he covered that monster freedom rally that you were the principal speaker of about 10 years ago back in Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
And he knows of you extremely well, admires you enormously, as do I, and millions of others. But the question, the first question I really wanted to ask you when I got you on the air was about Dee Dee, your sister. Tell me, it was so, because I watched your Facebook every day for notifications about how she was doing, and I got very saddened by it, and all I could send you were little heart figures. What happened to your sister? What kind of cancer did she get? What kind of treatment did she get? And how did you cure her?
Well, she's not cured yet, but she's got very aggressive inflammatory breast cancer. And so it's stage 4, and so that means it's metastasized to her esophagus. But she had a large tumor that was the size of about a russet potato on her breast, and that's what's gone. Her tumor is on her breast is completely gone. She hasn't had any surgery yet, so they're kind of at the traditional place we go, the cancer center, they're flabbergasted that her tumor is gone. But at the alternative clinic we go to, they're not surprised at all. So we combined some traditional treatment therapy with a very aggressive alternative therapy. And mostly it was a radical change in her diet, no sugar, you know, getting to a no processed food, no junk food, mostly a plant-based diet with whole grains and no GMOs and things like that. She's getting vitamin C infusions once a week, 50,000 IUs of vitamin C as a intravenously. She's doing Rick Simpson oil, which is a high THC cannabis oil treatment. So we just really, therapeutic doses of turmeric, which is an anti-inflammatory. And since she has inflammatory breast cancer, you know, we were treating it that way. So, yeah, so the tumor is completely gone. We don't know news about the metastasis until she finishes her treatment. She's got 3 more chemos to go, and then she'll get a PET scan to see, you know, where we're at in the process. And so that's why I forgot about, I thought the interview was at 7. I just have so much stuff on my mind right now.
Daylight savings time, and you missed a great Indian chief's observation about daylight saving time. So if you happen to listen to the replay, you'll hear it, and it is totally brilliant. In 1970, I interviewed a doctor who wrote a book called Sugar, Sugar, Sugar. And the doctor said then, that's 1970, that like nicotine, sugar should be labeled as a poison because it is a poison. And I was on the verge of serious diabetes. I was bleeding from every orifice in my body and going blind. The minute I was told I had diabetes, I remembered the book like an idiot. I stopped ingesting sugar, and within 2 weeks, Cindy, changing my diet to nothing but really good foods, it's all gone. Okay, so that's why I was so interested about your sister. But the other thing that interested me so much is, and Joe and I touched on it a little book, there were a few hundred thousand, maybe a half a million people at this march with all of the heavyweights there from Joan Baez, and you were the principal speaker. You had for a couple of years this coterie of the rich and famous and the celebrities hanging onto your coattails and following you everywhere and leading you everywhere. They knew that Iraq was a lie.
Right.
You knew it was a lie, but you continued to tell the truth about that lie. And all of these people from Jane Fonda and Ed Asner and Joan Baez and Arianna Huffington, they all disappeared. You know, I am not upset at Obama. I told Joe this. I'm not upset at the Democrats. I am upset at these voices for peace that seem to have surrendered to the war machine. And we only hear you, and we don't hear you and Chris Hedges and others as often as we should have. What is this like for you? It must be heartbreaking for you.
Well, it was at first, for sure. I know in 2006, you know, all of the so-called peace groups were rallying for the Democrats. And I was also, because they told me, you know, the Democrats told me that if we helped them get elected, that they would help us end the war, the wars. And so I believed them. And then, of course, in 2007, they immediately stabbed the anti-war movement in the back. But the Democrats, because they became the majority in the House of Representatives, and so, but, you know, many of these so-called anti-war organizations were really just anti-Republican war organizations. And it just magnified when Obama was elected. And of course, you know, he was the savior of the world. And to criticize him meant you were racist. But I just went forward criticizing the policies of the Obama administration, like I criticized the policies of the Bush administration, because to me they were the same policies. And so anyway, at first it was really hard for me to lose all of my so-called friends and colleagues and comrades. But now it's been 7 years, I guess, and many people have, their eyes have been open to the farce of the Democratic Party, the electoral politics system. And then, but the people who we've always been very strong on standing on our principles of peace, economic justice, environmental sustainability, when we have stuck to those principles, the people who always have were very close. And so I guess you find out who your true friends are and the people you can trust and count on when you go through something like this, that's for sure.
Today, a couple of years ago, I remember you took that bike ride across the country for peace, and I was shocked and disappointed that it, such a valiant effort, didn't get any attention. But let's say you had been taking a ride for breast cancer or a ride for lowering your cholesterol or anti-sugar or diabetes, you would have gotten major media attention, but you didn't get any. Do you today get any support, sort of privately or secretly, from some of the rich and famous who help, want to try to help underwrite what it is that you do, or have they all gone away?
No, I don't get it. I get support from my supporters who send me $5 here or there. I don't have any of the rich and famous, and even the rich and famous, really, they weren't really that generous with their pocketbooks anyway. So, you know.
I do hope your book, I read as much of it as I could online, The Obama Files. It is just a wonderful book. I told the audience up top, it's six great chapters beginning with 2009, ending in 2014. It's immensely, immensely readable. I hope you have enormous luck with it. How can people get The Obama Files?
Well, they can just go to my website, cindysheehansoapbox.com, and there's a tab that says Obama Files. They can order. It can be ordered on Amazon. Like you said, you can order it electronically or a physical copy, or you can order it from me. And if you order it from me, it'll come autographed, an autographed copy of the book. But there's various ways that people can order it, and that's at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
You had run for political office yourself, and there was a time, for example, when Ralph Nader, who was really a true American patriot when it comes, first of all, to helping the consumer for all these 50-some-odd years that he's done it. He was probably the most visible and the most popular. He had to sue to get into some debates, and in one debate where they wouldn't let him in, they arrested him for trying to get in on the debates. Now, following that, you came along and you got some publicity because of your anti-war stance and the loss, sadly, of your son. Now, Jill Stein comes along, who seems to have the same kind of platform as you and as the rest of the peace activists like Ralph, and she gets nothing at all. People I know who are smart and informed don't even know the name Jill Stein. They don't even know she exists. So why do you think somebody like Jill or yourself would continue to try to bash your heads against this brick wall?
Well, I definitely am not going to bash my head against that brick wall anymore of electoral politics. But, you know, I think we do it. I can't speak for Jill, but I do know Jill, and I admire her greatly. Gloria LaRiva, she's running for president with the Party for Socialism and Liberation. She's here in California. I know these women, and I know that they have immense amounts of integrity and compassion. And I did it because I wanted somebody to be talking about the issues of the issues that I said earlier. And however, I've learned in my three attempts now in the electoral politics arena that unless you have an R or D after your name, you are not going to be covered. Your program isn't going to be talked about or debated. And to me, it is a brick wall of electoral politics. And I think we need to find more creative ways to cause and effect this revolution that we so desperately need, but not political ways. Because, you know, every 4 years when the presidential politics come around, it's just people just go a little bit crazy, I think. And people get so caught up in presidential electoral politics, like it really matters, like we really have a choice when we know we don't. Our only choice is to get out in the streets. I mean, President Obama is sending more troops to Syria and Iraq as we're speaking. Where is the outrage? Where are the people on the streets demanding peace and an end to empire? No, they're going to Bernie Sanders rallies, and he's just, to me, a warmongering imperialist, too.
What'll happen to Bernie Sanders is he will be the Democrats' Ron Paul. I must tell you, I was so disheartened with Ron Paul. He did bring attention to America's foreign policy and to the Federal Reserve, and yet he refused to follow his own beliefs and run as an independent. Ross Perot was the only one who did that, and he had to bow up because they had threatened the life of his daughter, and still he gave the election, sadly, to Bill Clinton, the worst president in American history for what he did to the United States.
Right. Well, you know, and it's also Bernie Sanders is following the tradition of the other Democrat sheepdogs like Dennis Kucinich and Jesse Jackson and people. The Democratic base, I think, thinks more like we do. But they vote for centrist to right of center politicians just because they have a Democrat after their name.
Thomas Jefferson said that for democracy to survive, the roots of democracy are going to have to be watered with the blood of patriots. But you know what? I think they have succeeded so well in this country that taking it over that will absolutely never happen. I think if America collapses, which it is collapsing now, it's going to be an economic collapse created by the greed of the 1% who are perpetrating this. So, Joe, you're on the line with us. Do you have a question you'd like to pose to Cindy?
Cindy, when was the great to talk with you again? I did get the opportunity to interview you back in 2005. For WJLA when we did that thing on Operation Ceasefire. What was the one moment where maybe it changed for you? It maybe was an aha moment, an eye-opening moment when you realized that the two-party system is aptly called a system and that really what it does is generate compliance. It doesn't generate change differences.
Well, I think you know, I was thrust into the movement with the death of my son, and I was not a sophisticated activist or really a deep analyst of what the U.S. is capable of, what the empire is capable of. But I think mostly it became crystal clear to me in 2006, 2007, when the Democrats took over majority in the House of Representatives, and Nancy Pelosi became Speaker of the House, promising that she would not hold George Bush and Dick Cheney accountable for getting us into Iraq, Afghanistan, or for 9/11. And so, and I mean, the massive crimes against humanity and the Constitution, that the lies and the cover-ups and everything. And so I think it was then, when I left the Democratic Party, I realized that it was a deeply rotten to the core institution.
Could I interrupt you a minute? Because I asked Joe this question earlier because he knows of you so well. Mm-hmm. You just finished saying you weren't an experienced activist. There were hundreds and hundreds of mothers who lost their sons to this dreadful lie. What was it about you that made you the woman and the activist you are? Because you seemed, from your background, just to be a simple, plain, ordinary housewife. And all of a sudden, you blossom into this. What was it about you that made you grow in it? I mean, it's not just that you became it. You keep growing every year.
Well, I always tell people, it's not like when my son was killed, I was just like born out of the head of Zeus or something. I did go to school. That's what they always ask me, like, how are you so articulate? Well, you know, I got into UCLA, which is not a school for slouches, and I did learn some stuff there, you know? And I've always loved to read and to stay informed and, you know, to debate and stuff. But I think most of the mothers haven't become outraged like I have, and haven't done what I have, because most of the mothers have to believe that their child was killed for what George Bush said, a noble cause. And I knew before Casey even went to Iraq that if something happened to him, it would be for lies and it would be for nothing good. So I was already upset and I was already angry.
Did you try to discourage Casey at all?
Did
you tell him to go to Canada?
Yeah, I told him I'd drive him there, or I told him I'd run him over with the car just enough to disable him. And he's just like, he said, Mom, I don't want to go, but I have to go. And the sooner I go and do my year, I'll be home. And, you know, we'll just get it over with. And so he was just there for a few days, actually, before he was killed. So he, you know, join the military for economic reasons and for the so-called benefits that they're supposed to get. And, you know, Casey was always somebody who always liked to help and to serve anyway.
I know four graduate students, honor students, 20, 21 years of age, who cannot get a job and are joining the military.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no place else for them to go. I mean, when Joe talked earlier about how smart the system was in destroying democracy as we know it, they are so smart in dumbing down Americans to the point, because what happened in 68, as you said, people voted with their feet in Chicago, okay? It was people taking to the streets that stopped the war in Vietnam. It wasn't the politicians that stopped it. It was the American public. They were smart enough to dispense with the draft, but in order to get cannon fodder, they need people in the army. And the way to get them in the army is to not make them smart enough to get a job.
Well, you know, and my daughter, Casey's next youngest sibling, she has a master's degree, and she's a bartender in San Francisco. So there's work. There's just not meaningful work.
It's not about how smart you are to get a job. It's
right.
What jobs are out there to be had.
Right.
And okay. John,
one of the fascinating things about it is there's this thing that the Ron Pauls of the world, and this is something that Cindy, I'm sure, has had her ear bent on many occasions by the anti-war libertarians who find common cause have found common cause with Cindy over the years. And that's military Keynesianism. And that's the idea that you can generate economic growth and jobs, not by investing in schools and building bridges and rebuilding highways and massive public works. You do it by expanding the military.
And Cindy, you know what, dear? You have five great grandchildren. I see their pictures all the time. And I said earlier that you're working every day not to make it a better world just for us, but every day for your grandchildren. And they call you by that great learner musical. They call you Gigi.
Yes.
Okay, why did they call you that? And this I want to play for you as a way of saying goodnight to you. So why do they call you Gigi?
Well, it was when my daughter got pregnant with my first grandchild. She made up the name. It's actually supposed to be just the initials Gigi. It stands for Glamorous Granny.
That's great. Okay.
I'm not glamorous, so I think it was ironic. Gigi. They call me Gigi, and I just love that name, and I love my grandkids to death, but I do it for all their little grandchildren, colleagues also around the world. I can't live with the idea of the world that they're going to inherit. We have to make it better.
Okay, what I'm going to do, if you don't mind, I'm going to play you out with this. His name is Vic Damone. He had a stroke recently. He had one of the great, beautiful... Frank Sinatra said he had the best voice of any vocalist, but I wanted to play this out to you. I'm going to send it to you so that your kids can play it all the time for you. Do you mind if I play a little bit of this for you?
No, not at all, of course.
Okay, here we go. Hang on. He just has the most wonderful, wonderful, sweet voice, and he is indeed... He was a really sweet man, and I played with him the last years. They played the Crosby up at Pebble Beach. I want to thank you.
Thank you, John. It was great to talk to you again.
Oh, it was great to talk to you, dear. I will email the song to you. And again, I would suggest everybody get the Obama files. It is just brilliantly written. It's so informative, so easy to read, and most important, you've got to read it. Anyway, Joe, again, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Nice talking to you, Joe. Bye-bye.
Adios.
Okay, bye-bye, dear. Have a great weekend. Oh, Joe, thank you again for coming on and saving me.
Hey, it's a mutual... we're in this thing together. When you're in the foxhole, you're in the foxhole, John.
Okay, thanks, Joe, very, very much, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you all for listening. Bye-bye.
You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 I love you.